I think a lot of us would agree that one of the most frustrating aspects of living in America in 2013 is the way that we seem to have lost a sense of being on the same team. Instead of thinking of ourselves as Americans or Michiganians, all too often it's Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, Tea Party, Christian, Muslim, and so on. And the result seems to be such a deep sense of division, of gridlock in Congress and in Lansing, of flinging blame instead of building solutions, a fear that somehow we've lost our way and we've become divided and we've become cynical. My next guest addresses these fears and what he believes needs to happen to break down walls between factions and groups and tribes and get us moving as one nation, one state, one people. He believes we need to focus on the common good. His book is entitled On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good, published by Brazos Press. He grew up in Detroit. He lives and teaches in Washington, D.C. these days. He is an author, a theologian, a preacher, social activist. Jim Wallace joins us now in the studio. Jim, welcome to Stateside.
Great to be home, and I can tell you've read the book.
I have indeed. I think there's a lot of good messages that we're going to get to talk about. And I want to have you start, Jim, by get us on the same page, everybody listening, when you talk about the greater good. What do you mean?
You know, I went away on sabbatical to write this book, and my discipline was not to write or speak or be interviewed about the political narrative for the first 3 months of the election year. It was tough discipline, but I kept it. And every morning I'd get up early and have quiet and exercise, and I'd read and write all day, but I'd watch the news cycle at night. Mm-hmm. The more disengaged I was, the more I watched, the more depressing it seemed. The polarization, the vitriol, the shallowness on politics and the media, the hate talk, really. And it really struck me how we've lost this ancient idea called the common good. And it goes back in all our traditions, Catholic social teaching. It's Umuntu in Africa. It's everywhere. It means that we are all responsible for all. It means our neighbor is finally the test of our life together. The line of the book, the opening line, expresses the hunger people feel. Our life together can be better. So I'm going around the country. It's really a common good tour as much as a book tour. And I'm hearing the hunger is so deep for this, but the cynicism about politics is also very deep.
And it's something that you you don't have to look very far at all to get that sense of cynicism, which makes, I think, citizens and makes us feel like, gee, the wheels are coming off the wagon here.
I think so. What I'm saying in the book is skepticism is a good thing. Be skeptical of Washington and Wall Street, for example. But cynicism is a spiritually dangerous thing because cynicism is a buffer against personal commitment. You know, we say, I can't change, so I'll step back, surround myself with some more security, and I'll just not be as engaged. I think the powers that be almost like us to be cynical, to not engage them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking about how ordinary people can make decisions in their families, their schools, their workplaces, their congregations, their neighborhoods, that can build the kind of social movements that only change politics, abolition, women's suffrage, civil rights. Right now, the one thing going to happen in D.C. that's any good is by August recess, I'm predicting we'll have comprehensive immigration reform, not because of Washington, but in spite of it. Mm-hmm. Movements on the outside have made Washington listen to this system is so broken, we have to fix it. But they're not listening until we make ourselves heard. But so decisions we make in our lives, I think, can build a common good.
When we talk about a country or us as a state united for the common good, have we had that happen in our history?
It happens around tough questions. It happened around civil rights. It was hard. It was long. Doesn't come easily. But when you ask the right question, like Lincoln, I quote in the front of the book, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side. Lincoln didn't always know what that meant, but he flipped the question. We always want to bring God onto our side in religion and politics. He says, no, wrestle with what it means to be on God's side. Same with the common good. I can't sit here, Cynthia, and say these 10 things are the common good. Agree with me. Mm. But it's the right question. Let's not ask what's in. If it's just taking care of myself, my group, my tribe, my nation, my party, we'll be in trouble. unless we learn how to take care of each other, and the neighbor is extended beyond our group mm-hmm. and our tribe, then we're in serious trouble. So the common good is really we're all going to be responsible for all here, and then have a debate, a good political debate about the issues. That's fine if the common good is our goal, not winning and losing for our political sides, our donors. D.C. is funded by wealthy extremists
yeah.
who control the okay. debate, and most people that I meet in the road feel politically homeless.
Mm.
They don't really are drawn. They cast a vote as best we can, and they may strongly believe in this candidate, but they don't really feel like they've got a home in politics.
And when you see the public approval ratings, Congress, and
yeah.
also we have that in Michigan with the state legislature,
right.
there is that sense
exactly.
of disconnect. The book is On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good, written by my guest, Jim Wallace. So let's break down the title. What has religion forgotten? And what price are we paying as a state and as a nation because of that?
Well, this is the most biblical and theological book I've written for some time. Yet I also want to say that religion has no monopoly on morality.
Mm-hmm.
So at all these book events, people say at the end, they say, well, I'm an agnostic on my good days, atheist on some other days. But I wondered if I'd feel welcome in the conversation tonight, and I really did. So the spiritual foundation for the common good is the Second Commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And that, I was on sabbatical, a dad, 10-year-old Little League baseball coach. I got to thinking, that really means I can love Luke and Jack with all my heart and soul. I never thought I could love anything or anyone as much as I do them. And that's good, but it means I got to love other people's kids as well. What does that mean? That's a transformational ethic, and it was supposed to be. So the secular equivalent is the golden rule
mm-hmm.
in our democratic secular tradition. So we can have a conversation across all our boundaries. And I think we got to say what is good for all of us, not just our identity and tribe or class. So this is what the common good really challenges all of us to look past our noses and our own group to see what's best for all of us here. And we won't always agree, but that should be the framework. That's the question. That's the context of the debate.
And you point out in your book, Jim, that all too often when you look at what religion is today, it's too white, it's too privileged, it's too male, it's too American.
And again, God, bringing God onto our side. Mm. I talk a lot in the book about who Jesus was and whether it matters. And I would say this, I'm a Christian, so the kind of Jesus we believe in will determine the kind of Christians we are. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at what he said and did and whether that shapes our faith or not. But I've got my dearest friend in D.C. is a rabbi, and we worked together. And I was with a young Muslim in Chicago who's a good friend of mine. So we can move together across boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what happens when people of faith actually do and say what their faith says we should say and do. People are surprised, and then they're attracted. So I'm writing this book to people, some of whom are skeptical, are none of the above, the fastest growing affiliation in the religious world. And I love those nuns because they're really asking the hard questions. And so this is written in part to them to see what does it mean to have a faith that serves the common good, not just ourselves.
And politics. What has politics not learned? And what does that look like in Michigan in 2013?
Well, let me put it starkly. In politics, the checks have replaced all the balances in our public life. And so I have senators who tell me they have to raise $20,000 on average per day to get reelected. Now, I know your senators here. I know them all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this money's control over politics is a deeply serious problem. The common good won't be served until we can break the hold of money over politics. We have to talk about that out loud and talk about how we can change that. I have a whole chapter on that called Redeeming Democracy. Then you apply it to the economy, what I call the uneconomy, unfair, unsustainable, unstable. You know about that here in mm-hmm. Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and making many people unhappy. It's the uneconomy. What would it mean to restore economic trust in how and where decisions are made? So I try to apply all these things to practical issues and see how we can really lift up the common good, elevate the common good to our political discussion.
What do you think, and you spelled it out in your book, and I want you to tell us, continuing really with politics and with religion, what is the best big conservative idea?
You know, by the way, Cynthia has all these marks, these little tabs in the book. And I talk to radio people sometimes who just, you know, they're glad to be in the show. Talk about your book. But they don't really haven't read it. You've read this book. This is great. I appreciate that. The best conservative idea is personal responsibility. The best liberal idea is social responsibility.
And can we marry those two?
We have to. I mean,
how?
Well, we're at war. We're having this left-right war. So I'm saying, don't go left, don't go right, go deeper. Mm. I mean, how do we find things? What's right and what works, as opposed to what's left and what's right? For example, I've lived in poor neighbors most of my life, and I've never seen people or families lift themselves out of poverty without taking some personal responsibility for that. But they also can't do it without a context that offers them that possibility, mm-hmm. social responsibility, some social assistance in context. So we need both to do this. And so the book talks about everything from strengthening, you know, marriage and parenting, because I'm, you know, that's a big deal for me as a dad, to making the economy have more opportunity for people to really, you know, succeed. So how do we marry these, the best of both ideas, and away from the extremes and away from the ideological sort of politics of both the left and the right?
What do we need to do as consumers of media in choosing how we consume news and entertainment? And I guess, you know, also the other side of that coin is, what should the media be doing to help further this instead of make things worse?
Well, I'll tell you very specifically, on this tour, the best conversations I've had have been on radio shows like this that are longer than 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and we can have a serious conversation. The media, if you switch the channels, you see a different content, but the tone is very similar. The attacking, the hatred, and politicians are afraid of the pundits on their side. And too many people go to the media sources that just fuel their existing prejudices, and they don't really want to hear the other side. Read a broader range of people, and we have to create our own media. Sojourners, our sojo.net, is our own media platform. And 250,000 people every week plug into all of that, and we're trying to raise up a different view than people see in the media that's controlled by fewer and fewer people. Mm-hmm. So the media has to be a town meeting. What this show is here, from what I've heard of what you do every day, it's a town meeting. It's a town meeting for people in Michigan to talk about our public life, the quality of our public life, arts and culture and religion and politics, and what's the quality of our life together. That's what the media has to provide space for, and this book tour is trying to do that.
I was talking about your book with someone over the weekend, and who's very politically aware and committed and concerned. And his question was, could one not argue that the kind of the digging in and the drawing lines by whatever political group you pick mm-hmm. is for the common good, in their view, that each side very much believes that the stance it's taking and what it's doing is indeed for the common good of the state or common good of the country?
I wish I believed that, because I think it's usually for the self-interest of the people who are writing the checks and paying for politics. I live in Washington, D.C., and I don't hear them asking that question. They're asking who wins and who loses. And politics is more about campaigning all the time now than governing. It's not about how do we solve – well, I'll be very specific on immigration. Mm-hmm. I've had Republicans and Democrats, senators, look me in the eye and say, okay, Jim, now the way we'd normally do this is to help us win the next election. But we're listening to the faith community and what you're saying, and we're going to promise you on this one, we're going to do what it takes to get a bipartisan bill to fix this broken system where there's 11 million vulnerable people, as you remind us, mm-hmm. who are stuck between these two signs at the border. One says no trespass, one says help wanted, right?
Yeah.
So they're right in the middle. So they're saying on this one, they're going to do the right thing and fix it. And they're also saying to me privately, they're saying, if we get this done, they're almost giddy about doing something positive for change and doing something together.
That isn't going to be reviled.
Yeah. And if they say, if we get this done, maybe it'll affect other things too. Now, I hope it does, but the common good comes last to Washington. I mean, K Street has all these – there are three pharmaceutical lobbyists for every single member of Congress. That's one industry. Mm. Now, there aren't very many lobbyists in D.C. for low-income moms and kids. You know, they're not there. That's really the job, I think, of the faith community, to raise that kind of question. So the book talks about, you know, how you lift up the idea of the Good Samaritan. You know, the Good Samaritan goes global as a chapter here. Well, we get in Bangladesh, we had the collapse of a clothing factory, and the clothes on our backs are being made by people who this is happening to. Are they our neighbor, as the Good Samaritan parable asks? A lawyer asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And you don't know this, but he was a Washington lawyer who asked that question. I can tell that tone of voice. Who is my neighbor? I'm not responsible. And Jesus points to this Good Samaritan who stopped and helped a stranger. And so are we neighbors to those who make our clothes or whose minerals in the Congo are necessary to our cell phones? Are they our neighbor? I say they are.
The book is called On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good, by New York Times bestselling author Jim Wallis. Finally, do you feel truly in your heart that these kinds of changes can happen, or is it like trying in America in 2013, or is this like, are you the voice in the wilderness?
Well, I've been that sometimes, but, you know, I was in South Africa 10 years before the inauguration of Nelson Mandela, and I was interrogated by the South African security police, who were thugs, and I knew how desperate that situation was. My friend and mentor Desmond Tutu, the Archbishop, he taught me the difference between hope and optimism. Optimism is just how things look and they feel, and good day, bad day. Hope is a decision you make because of this thing called faith. So I met kids in Soweto in black townships 10 years before Mandela was inaugurated. And I said, will your children breathe free air in South Africa? 14-year-old kids looked me in the eye and said, I will see to it. And I knew apartheid was dead at that point. It took 10 years. I've seen too much change. Immigration is going to pass. I was a kid in the civil rights movement, but I was a kid who saw that happen. So the book is full of hopeful stories. Hope is a decision we make because of whatever it is that we call faith. And that's what changes history time and time and time again.
Jim Wallis, it was a pleasure talking with you on
Great
Stateside.
Great to be here, Cynthia.
Thank you. His newest book is On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. Author Jim Wallis will be at the Baker Bookhouse in Grand Rapids tonight at 7.